This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. My guest, Yung Chang, grew up in China worshiping Mao Zedong. Her parents had been heroes during the Communist Revolution of the 40s, and they lived a privileged life among the communist elite. But during the Cultural Revolution, Mao turned on Chang's family, and they were sent to labor camps. When the political climate relaxed in the 70s, Yung Chang returned to her home city, where she worked as a steelworker and an electrician. Later, she was allowed to go to England to study, and she became the first person from the People's Republic of China to receive a doctorate from a British university. She now teaches at the School of Oriental and African Studies at London University, and she's written a book about her life and the lives of her mother and grandmother called Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China. This family history follows the history of China as it moved from being an isolated feudal society to a communist world power. Until she began writing this book, Yung Chang didn't realize how shocking and dramatic her mother and grandmother's life had been.
I knew a little bit. For example, I knew my grandmother. My grandmother died in 1969 when she was 60, and I was 17 then. And I spent my childhood with my grandmother. My grandmother had this bound feet, which was, you know, not just to put a piece of cloth around her feet, but only the big toe was allowed to grow, and the other four toes and arch were crushed under a big stone and then bound to stop the bones from recovering. And when I was a child, I used to see my grandmother soaking her feet in a bowl of hot water, sighing with relief and saying to me that, you know, every day it's just excruciating pain. And then she would cut the rotten skin and the flesh with some special knife. And then, of course, to cut the toenails, which had grown into the flesh. So I knew some of my grandmother's tragic stories. But the book mainly was told to me by my mother when she came to visit me in 1988. And then for the first time ever, she told me a lot of stories about herself and her mother. It would have been impossible for her to talk even to me under Mao when I was in China.
Tell us a little bit about the China of your grandmother. She was born in 1909, and as you write about it, you say, and it's, I think it's true, it was a very feudal society. Tell us about some of the specifics of her life.
Right. Apart from the fact that her feet were crushed and bound when she was two, she was given by her father to this warlord general as his concubine when she was 15. In the early 1920s, China was ruled by warlords. My grandfather was the police chief of the warlord government in Peking. My grandmother was sort of married to him for a week, and then he disappeared for 6 years. And during the 10 years of marriage, my grandmother only saw him for less than a month. The rest of the time, she was a virtual prisoner in this house he bought for her under the watchful eye of his servants. Her life was... What was a prisoner? I mean, she couldn't even pace the house because of her crippled feet. And the warlord had one proper wife and many other concubines.
Can you describe in some more detail about this act of binding the feet? Now, you said earlier that the big toe was allowed to grow. How exactly were the feet bound?
Only the big toe was left alone, and then the four other toes and the arch were crushed, were bent and crushed under a big stone. And then a piece of long, thick cloth was wound around the feet to stop the bones from growing. And the ideal feet were literally 3 inches. And the heading of my first chapter is 3-inch golden lilies. That is the Chinese expression describing this kind of feet.
You describe this whole process of binding feet as a very kind of erotic experience for men in China, a kind of a foot fetish. And yet you also say that the truth of the matter is that the feet are rotting in this being bound.
Yes. In the erotic Chinese literature, you often read about descriptions of men sort of playing with women's bound feet in bed. In fact, if you see Chinese erotic paintings, the women were naked except their feet. In other words, the men never saw the feet. The feet were covered even in bed. Because the moment you let the feet go, they would grow again.
How long were your grandmother's feet?
It was just over 3 inches. I brought a pair of shoes and I showed various people, and they were all absolutely shocked. And you couldn't imagine, you know, how an adult's feet could fit into this thing. But of course, my grandmother's feet were unbound when she married to a Manchu doctor in her 20s. And then the feet was magical, that the moment you let the feet go, they would grow. So today, you actually don't have women with that kind of tiny feet. One reason was that when the communists came to power, they ordered all women to unbind their feet.
I'm wondering, though, if your grandmother's feet were broken by a stone and then bound, certainly in the early parts of her life, mm-hmm. did her feet look like feet, or did they look like an infant's foot, or were they more deformed than that?
The length was more like a child's feet, but they were, of course, completely deformed. I saw my grandmother's feet when I was a child. I mean, the foretoes were completely lifeless and with no bones. And it was a crippled, and she was crippled. And of course, the whole thing was that the bound feet was done by the mothers, like my grandmother's was done by her mother. I mean, she would scream and from the pain, and she fainted. And her mother then had to gag her with a piece of cloth and said, you know, this is for your own good. And if I, you know, don't, if I relent, and when you grow up, when you get married, and you would be discriminated against by your husband's family, you would live in shame, and then you would blame me for having been weak. This, of course, was the case with many other women.
Your grandmother was a concubine to a Chinese warlord. Mm-hmm. How was she able to escape?
The warlord lived in his own mansion at the foot of the Great Wall, which was far away from where my grandmother lived, which was Manchuria. When he was dying, he summoned my grandmother to his place with my mother, who was an infant then. And as soon as my grandmother arrived, her daughter was taken away from her, because by tradition, the blood descendant had to be raised by the proper wife and not by a concubine. And my mother was not allowed to call my grandmother mother. And so my grandmother realized that when the warlord died, the wife would have the power to dispose of her, and she could be sold to a brothel, in which case she would never be able to see her daughter again. So she decided to escape, and she had the help of another sympathetic concubine. And so she escaped and went back to Manchuria.
Your mother grew up under the Japanese occupation, which began in the early 30s in China and went really through the end of World War II. How would you compare living under Japanese occupation to this Chinese feudal society that you're just describing?
Of course, in my grandmother's time, women were no longer confined to the four walls of their house. So my mother had the freedom of, going to school and walking about. But, I mean, she saw plenty of Japanese atrocities. For example, a 14-year-old school friend of hers by accident stumbled into a secret Japanese arms depot. She was caught and tortured and then executed in front of the whole school.
Why did your mother join the Communist Party? What did the party offer to her?
When the Japanese surrendered in 1945, my mother experienced different rulers At first, there were the Russians. I mean, the local people welcomed the Russians as their liberators, but soon found that the Russians brought new problems. One was rape. Once my mother was chased down the road by a jeepload of Russians. And then the Chinese communists came briefly. And then Kuomintang, Chiang Kai-shek's Kuomintang came. And the Kuomintang was welcomed by the local people as their hope. But soon their hope was smashed. Kuomintang officials were hopelessly corrupt and inefficient. Inflation was horrendous. When my mother had to pay her school fees, she had to hire a rickshaw to carry the banknotes. And of course, also there was this the age-old cruelty against women. Largely stayed. My mother was introduced to the communists by a friend of hers who was a 17-year-old girl, but who was forced by her family to marry a 12-year-old boy. That was the tradition. A grown-up girl was married to a boy so that she could bring up her husband.
Are you saying that then your mother was afraid of a kind of return to the China of her mother?
That's right. And also the communists were the only force at the time to offer an alternative. And they were the only people who said, you know, we are going to change all this.
I'm speaking with Yun Chan, and she's the author of a book called Wild Swans, and it's the story of her grandmother, her mother, and herself living in 20th century China, for her grandmother under the feudal regime of the early 20th century, and for herself and her mother under communism in the second half of the 20th century. Yun Chan left China in 1978 to study in England. She lives there in London and teaches at London University. We'll take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Yun Chan, and she's the author of a book called Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China. You were born into the Communist Party's upper echelons, I guess we could say. How different were the conditions of your life from the average Chinese person? Were there true privileges in the communist system?
Absolutely. I lived in this ward compound, which is a huge place with guards guarding the gate. I had literally no contact with the sort of ordinary Chinese lives. And it was a world full of privileges and hierarchy. And I grew up taking all this for granted, so much so that when I first came to England in 1978, I thought England was wonderfully classless.
What were those privileges?
My father had a bodyguard, and he had a chauffeur, and we had servants, we had wet nurses. I was brought up in my initial years by my wet nurse. And in 1953, when my family traveled from the town called Yibing to Chengdu, the capital of Sichuan, by train, there were four different compartments, four different classes of compartments for the whole group. Like my mother would be in a separate place, my grandmother in a different place, my wet nurse and me in a different place, and the bodyguard in a different place.
When did you join the Red Guard?
I joined it, the organization, when I was 14, at the beginning of the Cultural Revolution. And I had grown up sort of intensely under this intense personality cult of Mao. Mao was my god. And when I went on this pilgrimage to Peking to see Mao when I was 14, and I didn't see him, and I was heartbroken and thought of committing suicide. And so when Mao ordered as young people to join the Red Guards, and I joined, but I was appalled from the very beginning and left as soon as I could within a couple of months.
What did you witness? What did you see?
And the one thing the Red Guards did was to beat up the teachers. I saw one of my teachers being beaten by the boys. I was called by these boys to go and witness the beating because I was regarded as this teacher's pet. I mean, she just sort of praised me in the lessons and when she sort of berated the boys. And so they really, they kicked her. And they made her kneel on the ground and kowtowed to them and said, you know, Red Guard Masters, please spare me, you know.
Did you feel that you could express any emotion as you watched that?
I was absolutely appalled and terrified and so I in fact left halfway through this. In fact, in 1989, I went back to China researching this book, and I went to see this. I had a long talk with this teacher, and we had some photographs taken, and together. And when we thought about the past,
your parents were accused of being capitalist roaders. What were their specific crimes?
There were many people accused of being capitalist roaders, and this accusation was not so much for what they had done or what they had to say, but for anyone who was the head of a section, of a unit. But as for my parents, my father was one of the few who stood up to Mao and voiced to Mao his opposition of the Cultural Revolution. So my father was arrested, tortured, and driven insane. In fact, Madame Mao personally condemned him and said, for a man like this, death is too easy for him. We must thoroughly smash him before we have done with him. And my mother was asked to denounce my father, and she refused. She also went through over 100 so violent denunciation meetings. She was made to kneel on broken glass, and she was beaten and tortured. And psychopaths in those days had a wild time because their cruelty was sanctioned, encouraged, and indeed glorified. My mother developed a hemorrhage from her womb and would often faint. And they both were expelled to labor camps.
Did you wonder at that time why the outside world either wouldn't or didn't intervene during the Cultural Revolution?
The idea actually didn't occur to me, the idea about the outside world. China was totally isolated from the outside world. America was, of course, presented as the number one enemy. When I was a child, the word hello was described as a swear word. The outside world was just completely remote to me. And when I was a child, also, if we didn't eat up our food, our nursery teacher would say, think of all the starving children in the capitalist world.
Of course, you know, we have our own version of that.
That's right. And of course, also in the Cultural Revolution, for the limited outside response that sort of featured in the Chinese official propaganda was all praise. And the people were praising Mao as one of the greatest leaders of the 20th century. People were praising the Cultural Revolution. And I'm very sad to say that much of that seemed to be true at the time.
You went to London in 1978 to study. And I wonder what your thoughts were when several years ago students took to Tiananmen Square in China to challenge the government. Did you want to be there?
I was in China researching my book when I saw the build-up of the demonstrations on Tiananmen Square. In fact, my initial reaction was amazement, how lack of fear these people were. Because when I lived in China, fear was everyday life. I mean, you couldn't even contemplate a demonstration. I mean, you would kill any thought of dissent in case this thought leaked out inadvertently and endanger yourself, your whole family, your friends and your relatives. So I was amazed. And then, of course, when the army opened fire, most people were shocked. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I was in London, back in London, watching television.
Would you say that the communist regime in China is even stronger since Tiananmen Square? Have they used that incident to consolidate their power?
The communist regime in China today is very different from the Maoist days. I mean, the door has been opened, and it can't be closed again. And the concept of liberty, the concept of human rights, and so on, have entered into Chinese consciousness. And the regime can't take that out again. So the population has changed.
Asia Watch has documented human rights violations, tortures, detentions, executions. What pressures do you think the outside world can bring to bear to bring greater reforms and freedoms in China?
I think the outside world just has to keep going on and on about this human rights issue. And also what I think is most important is we mustn't just focus on the prisoners. Of course, I mean, you know, we've got to focus on the prisoners, but we've got also have to realize that repression in China takes many forms. For people even living outside the prison, their life, their freedom is extremely limited, and they can be under many different forms of repression. And we must speak for these people as well. And I think we want maybe the outside world should press the Chinese government to at least to make some effort to establish a proper legal system, which would be the guarantee of human rights in China.
Yun Chan, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Okay, thank you.
Yung Chang's book is called Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China. I'm Marty Moskowain, and this is Fresh Air.